Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
Well, I hope it's a better day than last Saturday. I don't think I could take another Saturday like last Saturday.
Hopefully that's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Oh, my word.
I think it was. I mean, it snowed and it snowed and it snowed, and then the ice came.
Yeah.
Then the ice was on top of the snow. So it was so slick, you know, just trying to do anything, walk on the snow was almost impossible.
Oh, yeah.
I've never seen anything like it. And, of course, everybody had their little boxes to make, you know, a sled, because we don't have any sleds in Texas because it doesn't ever snow.
Yeah.
So everybody was making makeshift sleds. And, you know, it was fun thing to watch.
Yeah, it's fun for a day or so, but then after that, once you start getting stuck inside, and it's like, I really want to go someplace or do something, and, you know, they start going stir crazy, and by the time you get into day three and four, and, you know, then it's just almost like, okay, this is really getting old. But, you know, it is
for real, let me tell you. People have been on next door saying, how do we get to Sonic? Can we get to Sonic? I mean, how bad is the road, you know? And they keep saying, stay off the roads this week, and the schools are closed. The schools don't have any way to get the all this ice and snow off the property, so they can't open. And a lady that works at one of the hospitals said, don't get out unless you have to. She said they had 19 people there that have had accidents in the snow and ice.
Oh, my word. 19?
Yeah. 19.
Wow.
And, the wrecks are just, I mean, you won't even believe the wrecks. These 18-wheelers are just turned over on their side. Then nobody can get by. Then they run into somebody else. I think they said there's 145 wrecks.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, a lot.
And I imagine they probably have to stay there because they can't get to them to clear them because of the ice that's still there.
Yeah.
Oh.
And everybody thinks it's not bad, and they get in their car. And this lady said, from Argyle to Grapevine over here took an hour.
Oh.
It's 12 miles.
Wow.
12 miles took an hour.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Boy, that stinks.
I haven't found anybody that's been able to go to work. You know, we've been closed. We couldn't, and nobody could get to the office.
You know, it's like you have all this going on, all these accidents everywhere, the snow, the ice, and all these things, and people are more concerned about Sonic than anything else.
That's absolutely right. The women are all saying, I need my Sonic drink. I need my drink. Do you think I can get to Sonic? And the delivery people couldn't deliver. You know, they couldn't deliver. They couldn't get out.
Yeah.
So there's been no deliveries. Most things are closed. The restaurants are closed. The schools, you know, everything we know that we're used to doing is closed. The postman didn't come till later in the week. What else was closed? Oh, the people that come pick up the trash.
Oh.
They sent me a message and said, we're very sorry. We will not be picking up trash.
They're very sorry. I mean, you know, it's like you don't realize how much we're all integrated with, like, other things. You know, whether it's restaurants or, you know, groceries or, like you say, mail or, you know, the trash, all the simple things. When everything comes to a complete standstill, we realize, wait a minute, there's much more interaction between all of us than we even realize. So
that's right. And, you know, we have all of our food delivered anymore, so many things like that. Then all this happens, and everybody I know went to the store early.
Yeah.
Or they had it delivered early. And these people that were crying this weekend, wanting things, wondered if they could get it delivered, or crazy. They had a week to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's like, you know, because I was talking to people before the storm, and they were saying, you know, oh, gosh, we went to, you know, three different stores, and everybody had already picked everything over, and everything was gone. And those that waited until the very last minute, if they were to find supplies, you wonder how much supplies did they actually find? Because you don't always think, you know, okay, this is going to go on for, I mean, here it is, you know, a week later, and it's just like some people are just now getting to a place where, you know, they can get back to, I guess, life as we know it. It's like you don't think it's going to go on that long. And so how long will a loaf of bread last, or, you know, a jar of peanut butter or whatever it is? You know, you think, do we have enough? And we're finding out in some cases, no. So.
Well, you know, one of the weathermen said the first thing that his family buys is peanut butter. He said, if they're out of peanut butter, they can't exist. He said, they have to have peanut butter. He said, that's the first thing they do. And I knew a pilot years ago that when he traveled, he always kept peanut butter in his plane.
Really?
He said, if something happens, I can exist on peanut butter.
Yeah, well, that's true. That is true. So, it's good protein.
So it's a good staple, you know, to have for emergencies.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, because you can't, if, you know, power was to go out or whatever, you know, you couldn't cook, because you never know ahead of time, what do we get? You know, do we get things to cook, knowing that, you know, even though there's extra power, you know, that what was it last year? Or I think it was last year, you know, they did the thing with all the extra power so that this kind of thing doesn't happen. Hopefully. And so, you know, you don't know. Is it going to hold? Is it going to be, you know, really bad if it goes on for several days? Is it going to last? And so you don't know. Well, you know, you don't want to go get steak and chicken and hamburgers, because if you can't cook them, you're stuck there. And so then you got sandwiches. And then it's like, you know, do you have enough? I don't know. It's weird when you have to plan out rations like that for the unknown.
And everybody I know did go early. But they still, down here, I believe it was Burleson, H-E-B, who's so famous, ran out of everything. They showed on television all the empty shelves. How did that happen? Yeah. I mean, they had nothing. If you lived down there, you weren't going to get anything because they were out.
Oh, wow. That would be scary, just to walk into a store like that and see all the
yeah,
shelves
empty. Yeah, empty shelves.
Oh.
And everybody... I told everybody, people will buy enough for a month or 2 months, things they don't even need, but they think they might accidentally need it. So why not go ahead and buy it? I mean, yeah. That's the theory.
Yeah.
Now, by the time we got our orders done, there was no milk.
Yeah, so the milk was gone.
Said, yeah, all the milk was gone. They said, sorry, it's gone.
Yeah.
Order something else, you know. But, they still had eggs. They still had meat. Now, some meats they were out of, but they had some, you know, enough to get you by.
Jeez.
You know, it's something we won't forget in this part of Texas for years to come.
I know it. And hopefully it won't happen again for years to come, because you can forget.
I hope not. It's been a mess.
Yeah, it has. Jeez. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877. 588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website's AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
I meant to ask, how did the llamas do in the?
Well, they stayed in for 2 days. They just said, forget it all. We're going to cuddle up and go to sleep. And that's what they did.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I was shocked. I thought they would come out, but they did not come out.
Wow.
That's how bad the weather was.
Well, if it's too bad for llamas.
They stayed 2 days. Yeah. I mean, even with their heavy coats, they didn't come out.
Yeah. They said, no way. We're going to hibernate and take a big, long nap.
That's exactly what they did.
Wow.
And I don't know if they all slept in one barn every night or if they divided up. I couldn't quite tell.
As long as they were
from
inside.
From up here, well, I saw one peek his head out.
Oh, really?
And
just
I was
to kind
laughing
of check?
About that. Yeah. Yeah, he peeked his head out to look around.
So he was like the weather.
He didn't come out. That's right. He was the weatherman, and he did not come out.
Wow. He was the one who was assigned to go check it out, and he stuck his head, said, "Nope, we're standing here," and they did.
That's exactly right. He was the lookout man.
Now, llamas are pretty smart, though, aren't they? I mean, I think.
They are very smart.
Yeah.
I think they were pretty smart because they knew what to do. I didn't know if they would or not, because sometimes I've seen them, stay out too long. But as cold as it got, you know, when it gets down to 4 and 5 degrees, they were in the barn.
Yeah, I'm sure. And then you wonder, you know, sometimes you hear about, you know, the instincts that animals have, and you think, okay, well, do you think that they knew that this was coming and it would get this bad? And they just, I don't know what they would do, but, you know, plan ahead of time or, you know, gather everybody around and however they talk to each other, say, okay, we're going to stay in the barn because it's fixing to get bad tomorrow. And so they just kind of like plan on hunkering down.
You think they planned ahead?
I would think. I don't know. I'm not sure what they do. I mean, I know they don't have to go to the store and buy anything, but they must do something. They're not going to just wander out in the middle of a mess like that. So I don't know. Maybe they...
No, they were too smart for that.
Yeah. Sometimes I think maybe the llamas are smarter than some people.
That could be. I know Bella is smarter than some people.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's true. Now, you know, you take a little puppy like that, it's like you watch him in the innocence of something like this. She's never seen snow before, has she? Because she's only what?
No, she hasn't.
Yeah.
And she's a year and a half old. And, you know, when she first saw it, she wouldn't go out. Wasn't going to have anything to do with it. Then once we got her out there, she loved it. She loved playing in it. And she was sliding everywhere. Yeah. She's so little, she was really sliding.
Oh, wow. Neat. Did she like do any sledding or just like went out and frolicked in the...
No, she just was up and down all these big snow drifts. She went up them and came down them.
Wow.
And she was just sliding around everywhere.
Yeah. I bet she was as curious as could possibly be, saying, "This is neat."
She had her nose down. And then the other thing, she was after the birds. We had the most beautiful birds here I've ever seen.
Really?
There was cardinals. There was blue jays. There were some birds, and I can't even think of the name of them because I'd never seen them before. They were orange and brown. And
with that kind of weather?
They were just beautiful. Yeah. And the cardinals were fat. I mean, they had not missed a meal. Yeah. And then there was some... a little bit orange breasts that were little birds.
Wow.
And we were looking all the names up of what they were called. I know one was some kind of a lark, and I don't remember what kind, but they were beautiful birds, and they were all different colors.
I'm surprised that birds were out in that kind of weather. I would have...
See, that's what I don't understand. Where did they come from?
Yeah.
Because there was quite a few of them.
Huh.
And we don't even have a birdhouse. Which we ought to have.
Yeah, apparently.
For, you know, the little birds on a trip like this.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's interesting. That's probably a once-in-a-lifetime thing, too, especially if you don't usually see them and different
we
kinds.
We don't. We have cardinals a lot of the time, but not these others.
Hmm.
I think one was a meadow lark. I don't remember the names of the others, but I know they had to have been from somewhere else. And the orange and brown one, I had never seen one of those.
Wow. That's interesting. It's strange. It's one thing to see, you know, some different birds that you don't usually see when you expect to see them. You know, summertime, springtime, something like that. But in the middle of, you know, Snowmageddon, you don't think that's the time to look for birds.
That's right. Well, we also have 5 ducks on the pond. Oh, yeah, the ducks have come, too. They're just sailing along.
So it was more like winter storm at Faye's farm than anything else.
It was a bad winter storm at my place.
Wow.
I know everybody else had bad ones, too, so I don't want to say we're the only ones because I know a lot of people got a lot of snow.
Yeah, Yeah, they really did. It really, the storm kind of halted a lot of things for you know, quite some time. So is any business happening this past week, or was it just pretty?
Cause... Not till the end of the week, we couldn't even get to the office.
Oh, geez.
I mean, this was a substantial deal. This wasn't even a little bitty deal. I mean, you couldn't drive in it. The roads were closed. Oh, they put barricades out here.
Did they?
A
really?
Lot of the roads. They had to. It was so bad, people couldn't get over the railroad track. They couldn't get down Crawford. And so they put those orange deals out, those hobby horse-looking deals, out here to stop the traffic. Yeah, a lot of our roads are closed.
Oh, wow. I didn't know they'd gone that far to
They
close
did
them.
Because, they remember, we do not have snow plows.
Yeah. Yeah, this is...
In town they do, but out here in the country, these little roads, they don't.
Yeah. And, you know, when it only happens every once in a, I don't know, 100 years or a long time in between them, it's not like, you know, we kind of keep the equipment on hand, the supplies on hand. I mean, yeah, there's a few things here and there, but not like you would find in a place like Buffalo. They get snow all the time. And so it's more of a novelty.
One guy said today, he put a deal in on next door. He said, does anybody have a blade on the front of their pickup? I mean, can you believe that? I mean, a blade on the front of a pickup. Gosh, how are we going to get that done? Oh, man.
Okay. It's inventive.
Yeah. But,
oh, my word. So yeah, so you actually got some business done this week? Because I kind of didn't think you know,
well, we had two maturities this week.
Really?
We had John Garver, he matured this week, and there's quite a few people in it. About 8 people are in that policy. And then we had Petra Hintershed. I don't know if anybody remembers when they bought that. She died this week. So her policy is like $469,000.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
The other one, I believe, is bigger.
Jeez. I didn't. Yeah.
Yeah, it's $750,000.
Maturity
value is $750,000.
Huh.
So the people that put like $85,000 in, they're going to get back $109,000.
Oh, my word. That's pretty fantastic.
The people that put up $50,000 get $64,000.
Not bad. It's not bad at all.
Yeah.
It's weird. For some reason, I think, you know, okay, you know, all these, you know, businesses are closed and nothing is happening business-wise. But with something like this, it still goes on. It doesn't really matter about the weather.
It doesn't matter whether you're there or not. When it matures and we get paid.
Yeah.
And I'm looking here. These people put up $56,000, and they're getting $72,000 back.
Oh, my word. That's incredible.
Yeah. And wow. So everybody's getting paid. If you put in $50,000, you're getting
$64,000. Wow.
So everybody's getting a good amount of money on that. It's a good policy. And we did this in 23, and it was a colon cancer case. And it was a 28-month, and it came in 31 months.
Huh. I was trying to.
So that's close.
I remember. Yeah, it's very close. And I was trying to remember back. I don't remember the name itself, but I'm sure we talked about it at some point. It's just some of them.
Well, you know, we did.
Yeah, some of the names will stick with me, and then some of them just don't. But. Yeah, I mean, you know, we talk all the time about, you know, the market conditions and things don't affect the investment. Well, neither does weather. We should include that in the
mix
as well.
No, we never do say that. The weather does not affect it. So if we're snowed in, we can still get a maturity.
Yeah.
And we're finishing up a policy right now. So that's still working, too. Even though they weren't at the office, you know, they can send us an email and say, yes, I want in that breast cancer policy or whatever, you know.
Wow, which
breast cancer policy is almost filled. We only like $45,000.
That's what's left.
So, yeah, it's all that's left.
All right. Well, then that'll probably go quickly now, now that we mentioned
Oh,
that.
I think it will. Everybody's going to wake up and say, you know, we need to get on this.
Yeah. I'm sure people have been a little distracted this week, but, boy, you mentioned
something
like that.
Oh, yeah, I think they've been distracted bad. I mean, a storm will distract anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, you just kind of hunker down and watch what's going on outside. But meanwhile, you're still doing business because business needs to be done, and business doesn't stop, especially in this field. So
that's exactly right. It doesn't stop. It goes right on, whether we're, you know, snowed in or it's raining out or you can't get to the office. It goes right on.
Yeah. And a lot of what you do is, is maybe remote the right word to use? Because you don't have to be there. It's not like a merchant who has, stuff to buy or, you know, people don't have
That's
to go
right.
in there.
It's not anymore. Like if you had merchandise on the table.
Yeah.
I'm thankful we're not in that type of business because when I look at Saks, you know, when Saks bought Neiman's, it took them down.
Yeah.
And Saks... It had so much money, it was so profitable. So, you know, when you do things like that and buy a company that you know is in trouble, it hurts your bottom line. So they're closing some of their stores. And it's just the business we're in is better for everybody.
Yeah.
It's better than the stock market because it goes up and down and all around. And it can hurt you at the wrong time. But this, you know, is a life insurance policy, and, you know, I like the way it pays off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so do a lot of clients, and the ones, and I know we say this a lot, but, you know, we talk about some investors who maybe sometimes will get on the sidelines and, you know, they'll be busy or, you know, whatever happens. Anyway, they're not fully invested all the time. You talk about liking the investment itself. Those who have been in life settlements for a long time and are always in policies, whether they're maturing and then reinvesting and then maturing and reinvesting, and that kind of cycle continues, the more policies they're in and the more years that they've been doing this are the ones that are really, really profiting and have really expanded their portfolio. So, you know, it's really the law. Can we say it's the law of averages over time? Is that a good way to put it? Or
I think so, probably. You can say it's the law of averages or, you know, the timing, the way it's timed,
yeah.
You know, is another thing. And the people, you know, they get invested, they sit back and they relax. They don't have to do anything till it matures and the money goes in their bank. So it's a pretty simple deal.
Yeah.
You know, the profit, they don't go into these policies unless they like the profit.
Yeah.
So we have good profit, you know, 25, 35% all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And when people are, say somebody was in like two policies at any given moment, and then you have somebody, you know, across the table who might be in, say, 10 policies at any given moment. The one who is in the 10 policies is going to make more. So it really kind of depends, I would say, correct me if I'm wrong, but I would say it really depends on how aggressive people want to be as far as investing. And so, you know, the policies that you had when you first started, yeah, okay, it was kind of like the early process. Everything is always different in the early process. But for years...
It was different because we were not experienced 12 years ago. Yeah. And we just took people's word for it. And we don't do that now. We investigate. We check it. We check the doctor's reports. I'll look up what kind of cancer it is, how many people survived it, how many have died, you know. If it's just a little skin cancer and you only have one, I figure you're going to survive.
Yeah.
But if you have several and they're deep, you may not survive that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so, I mean, you've learned a lot over the years, and I don't know how many policies you've done in 12 years, but I would imagine it's quite a few, which means, you know, you've had
several hundred.
Yeah. I was almost going to dare
several,
go 1,000.
Several hundred.
Yeah.
But it probably is way over 1,000.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you do this all day, every day, for that long, and you deal with that many different policies. I mean, when you're immersed emerged into something that heavily, and this is like literally what you do. This is your expertise. You know, you start to learn, you know, I don't want to say shortcuts, but you learn a lot of the little intricacies that, you know, make the difference, you know, things to look for, things not to look for, what's important, what's not important, what do we put more weight in? If there's five pieces of data, which one, you know, carries more more weight than anything else? And so you've learned all these little things, all the ins and outs. And so the policies that people have been in when they've been in the most number of policies, they're making the most money. And so, you know, if people have been kind of maybe, I don't know, not fully invested, maybe they're, I don't know, busy or distracted, don't check email, I don't know, all kinds of things. If they're not, it might be a good time to consider getting back in because the policies are so much better.
That's exactly right. They're a lot better than we started. And they come due on time or early now. And they weren't coming on time or early before because they weren't as good about telling us about the story. And now we have, you know, better reports on everybody we do.
Yeah. Yeah. The reports are better. There's more information there. You have more things to check now. You have more pieces of data, which helps round out, you know, things even more than they used to be. So, yeah, I mean, nothing. I know we talk about this all the time. We just pointed it out, but, you know, nothing affects it. We say all the time, it's, you know, if the stock market crashes or whatever, if there's something going on in, you know, some other part of the world, you know, it can affect all kinds of different things. Real estate goes up and down. You know, all these different types of investments, there's so many variables involved with them. But with the life sentiment, as we just kind of like, I guess, kind of came to mind, you know, these things don't affect it, not even weather. And so, you know, it's like when the policy matures, they pay out 100%. They've got the resources on hand. They don't have to go borrow the money from someplace. It's just such a solid, conservative type of investment. It's just, I don't know. I think the more people learn about life settlements, it seems like the more that they're in, even those who, you know, maybe dabbled their toes a couple of years ago. It's just getting bigger and bigger.
That's right. And we have people that call every week. You know, I'm retiring. I want to get out of the stock market. I want to get out of these investments. I want something that's more sensible. And this is the investment for them because it, you know, it's not fast. It's just reliable, straightforward. It's a life insurance policy. We're buying it from someone who has terminal cancer. And that's a simple way.
Yeah. I mean, that's really all. There's not really much more to say about it.
That's right. It's simple. It's a life insurance policy on someone that needs to sell it because they need the cash.
Yeah.
And that's where we come in and we buy these policies. And then my people, all of our clients get paid when it matures.
Yeah.
And that's the whole secret, getting that policy to maturity.
And you've even sped that up a little bit over the last several years is, you know, the payouts and how quickly people get paid. You've found maybe shortcuts around that, like getting the certificate earlier and finding different ways to do these things. So that's even increased and gotten better.
That has increased a lot because the new company that we took on about a year and a half ago, they're better, they're faster, and they figured out a way to get the death certificate faster, which we needed, and it doesn't take as long. And the other thing they do, they file the claim as soon as they die. And so the claim has already been filed. They're just waiting on the death certificate. So it really helps.
So if somebody is planning retirement and they're saying, okay, I may not retire until maybe the end of 2026, or maybe, I don't know, it's coming up in the next 2 or 3 years. When should somebody, if they haven't started doing life settlements before, they've never done anything like this, how far in advance should somebody plan to start something like this in order to get ready for retirement by the time it actually
hits? Well, it depends. Now, if they've been with a company, let's say it's an old company, they've been there a long time. If they've been there over 15 years, lots of times you can take the money out early.
Oh.
But if you haven't been there 15 years, lots of times you can't. So sometimes we can't plan it till 60 days before you retire. But then some, we can move the money now and, you know, get you established, get you into a conservative position early. So it depends how long you've been there. And a lot of people don't realize, let's say you're going to do a Roth. A lot of people, you know, are converting some of their IRAs, some of their 401ks to a Roth. Well, you have to pay the taxes up front. But if you buy, let's say, an annuity, the annuity has that bonus, and that'll cover what it costs you to pay into your taxes.
Mm.
So that's another good thing.
So you can use that to take care, to absorb the taxes, and then you never have to think about them again since they're all up front.
Never again. The rest of your life, you don't even have to take an RMD on a Roth like you do an IRA at 73 and a half. You don't have to do that with a Roth. A Roth, once you've established it, it's good to go forever.
Huh. Do people, yeah. And I guess probably people are different, but I'm sure there's probably pros and cons of paying the taxes like up front versus having to pay them down the road.
There is, and a lot of people do. And a lot of people, when they come to me, they already have a Roth. So that therefore, we don't even discuss it. We just set the Roth up and set their IRA up. But if they want to do a Roth, we will set one up. And, you know, there's pros and cons on Roth.
Hmm.
If you've already got it, then there's no problem at all. That's really easy because you don't ever have to take that money out. And you can take money out if you want to, but the taxes are paid. So it's a home free deal. And you can leave the other IRA like it is and not take anything till 74 or 75.
So as far as planning, is it usually customary for most people to say maybe do a life settlement like several years before they retire, and then as they get closer to retirement and even after, switch over to an annuity? Is that?
Well, they may want to do both. Mm. They may want to do the IRA and an annuity after they retire for the income. If they need that income every year, an annuity is the way to do that. But now if they just want growth and they want profit, a life settlement's the answer.
All right.
Because it's going to give you that growth year after year. But it doesn't give you the income stream. Or you can take lump sums out of it.
So
as far as monthly or anything, you don't get monthly checks or anything. But you can take money out at the end of every time you have a profit. You can say, I need $30,000 or $20,000 or $10,000, you know, whatever you need. There's several different ways to do it.
All right. So if I was going to kind of put this in a kind of like explain it as though I was five, is it fair to say that maybe the life settlement, the profits are larger, but the payouts are inconsistent? You can't really, I mean, it's just whenever the policy matures versus an annuity where you know when the payouts are, how much the payouts are, and they're consistent, almost like when you would get a paycheck, you know, the 15th and the 30th of the month. You can kind of almost plan out the annuity.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah, annuity is for your income if you're going to need an income every year or every 6 months or monthly. That's what an annuity is for, because you've got your bonuses. We've still got that 16% again. We've got that, and that plus what you make. And if you put money in 3 years in a row, you get that bonus every year for three. So there's a real good prospects there. And then if you say, I need to make a profit in addition to what the annuity's making, you may want to put some of it over here in life settlement where you've got that profit of 15-25%. Because the profit, you can't beat on a life settlement. It's a lot more than an annuity, but it's not an income stream.
Okay, just because of the inconsistency. So,
yeah, because you don't know, you know, what month. It may be 3 months. It might be a year on a policy. We don't know.
Yeah. So it may be an 18-month
policy. We don't know
policy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it's an 18-month, you're going to get paid 18-month or 21 or 23. You know, it's going to vary.
Or it could come
in
early.
So then you get paid in a lump sum. Or it can come in early, like this one did on this. You know, we have some that come in 3 months. You know, those that we just put in the bank a month ago, they came in 6 months early.
Wow. That's a big difference.
It was a big difference. We weren't expecting it.
So
we thought they were good policies, but we didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah, that's an extra good one. So
it was.
So the way I'm picturing it in my head, for those that do both annuities and life settlements, it's almost like the annuity is maybe the... Oh, I don't know how to say what's in my brain. It's almost like the consistency, like the, okay, we're going to get this on this day and then this day and this day. And then the life settlement would be something maybe like extra.
Your extra profit.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's what I'm
saying. It's for your profit.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be consistent profit.
Okay.
And then you can, after you've been doing life settlements for a while, you can transfer it to an annuity when you get older. When you get 79, 78, or 80, you're going to want to get into an annuity where you don't have to think about it, where you can just, it comes to you, you get your check, and that's all there is to it.
Huh. I hadn't really put it in that frame of mind before in my brain, as far as switching it over as you get to 75, 80 over to an annuity. That's interesting.
That's right. So when you get to a 79 or 80, you're going to want to do annuities. Because it's easy, it's established, you know, when you're going to get that check, and it goes direct to your bank account. You can do direct deposits.
Hmm.
So, you know, every year it just goes in your bank account, you get your profit, and then you take so much out, and that's the way it is.
So then let me ask you a question. If somebody's in an annuity and they say, okay, well, I want X amount to take out each year or each month or whatever it is, and say they don't need that much. Say they realize, oh, gosh, you know, I overestimated. I don't need this much. Can they switch that? Can they change that?
Oh, yes. Every year you fill out a form every year, and it says this is how much I need.
Okay.
And we send it in, and they send you a check, or they just do a direct deposit either way.
All right. So if somebody puts
a lot of people tell me that they're going to take 10, and that's too much. And so they end up taking – you know, 10,000 or maybe 5,000, depending on what their situation is. And everybody comes to me and says, Faye, I do not owe a thing. My home's paid for. My cars are paid for. My only expense is my utilities and my phone. Well, you know, if that's your only expense, and if you're taking $8,000 or $10,000 a month, that's plenty.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some people won't even take that much. I've got some people that been with me a long time, and they take about $2,400 a piece, and that's it.
Well, it's good to
they
know
they don't need it.
Yeah, I mean, because sometimes people kind of overestimate a little bit. It's nice that, you know, if you don't need as much, or if you need to make a change, you're not like locked in forever. You can go ahead and make that change each year if you want to, or, you know, if you need to, or anything like that. So it's nice that there's some flexibility built in with it as well. So
we got a lot of flexibility.
Yeah. And you know, it's like, I think sometimes people think, oh gosh, I'm going to get into this thing and I'm locked in and I can't make any changes. Annuities are more flexible, I think, maybe than sometimes people realize, you know, not only just for what people take out, but then, you know, if say you have something set up and somebody's a beneficiary and then you have a falling out in the family, you can change that as well. You're not locked into, if something happens, this person's going to get it no matter what and I can't change it. You can make those adjustments.
And the other thing you can do, you can change your investments every year. But if you like the way it is, you don't want to change it, just leave it alone. But if you want to make changes, you can do it every year.
Wow. Yeah.
It's very versatile.
It is.
Very, very versatile.
Yeah, and it's the versatility and the consistency and the bonuses. I don't, you know, no wonder you've been getting calls the last, I don't know, several months or however long it's been, about people more interested in annuities than maybe they used to be, because, you know, it's just kind of one of those things that maybe has sat there and people hadn't really realized what they're all about and how fantastic and conservative they are. So I can see why people have been more interested lately, and you've had a surge in annuities. So I get it. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And every Saturday around this time, we get into trivia. So what is our topic today?
It is Molly Wright. And it's Molly Wright Armstrong, to be exact. She was born January 23rd, 1875, in Bell County. And so it was a long time ago. And this girl is the first woman to be an optometrist in the state of Texas. She's the second one in the United States.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's an amazing story. She went to Baylor. Then she studied optometry in Georgia, Illinois, and Mississippi, and Missouri. She began her practice now in 1899.
Wow.
And so she practiced for many, many years. In fact, I believe it was 63 years that she was an optometrist.
Wow.
I mean, this woman was fabulous. So she lived in Brownwood all the time, and she was the first optometrist to do the law in Texas. She was helped pass the law for the Texas Board of Examiners, and she served as vice president and president of the board. She belonged to that for 24 years.
Wow.
She was president of the Texas Optometric Association from 23 to 25, and then she was the director when the Texas Optometrist was first published. She was its editor for that.
Oh, my word. Wow.
Then they needed liability insurance for optometrists. She was the one that got it passed where they would have professional liability.
Jeez. That's...
Yeah, and she became a trustee of the American Optometric Association. And in 1927, she was instrumental in organizing the Texas Women Auxiliary. How about that?
That's a big deal.
The same year, she was appointed as national director of the American Optometric Association in Brownwood. She was the organizer and first president of the American League Auxiliary.
Wow. Really?
The Brownwood Business and Professional Women's Club and the Brownwood Civic Leader. She served as director of the Brownwood Chamber of Commerce.
Oh, my.
I mean, this lady is just an amazing woman. She was married to Brownwood jeweler Walter Armstrong. He died in 48. And she retired from practice in 1962. I mean, can you imagine this? First woman being an optometrist in Texas and the second woman in the United States.
So, wait a minute. If she retired in 1962 and she was born in 1875, she was 85 years? No, that's not right. That can't be right. I'm trying to do the math here.
Okay. 1875 is when she was born.
Uh-huh. And served until...
She opened her first deal in 1899. She served 68 years. She retired in 1962 after 68 years. But she wasn't dead then. So she didn't die till 1964.
Wow. So she was, I can't do the math. I don't know why. But she was in her 80s, if my math is even kind of close.
Right.
That's amazing.
But look how many years, 63 years.
Yeah.
I mean, this, and she was president of all the professional women's clubs, the Civic League, director of the Brownwood Chamber of Commerce. I mean, she was a woman to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
She wasn't a fly by night. You know, I mean, first optometrist in Texas for a woman. I mean, I think it's an amazing deal that she did this.
Yeah.
And there is a plaque in Brownwood out there in the Civic deal shows all about her, you know, and she's a part of our Texas history.
Wow. I mean, back in the 1870-somethings, that wasn't, I mean, women didn't really hold professions back then, I don't think.
No, they didn't, and especially to get a degree and to go to three different colleges. I mean, you know, and she went to Georgia, Illinois, Missouri, and Baylor University.
Wow.
Can you imagine starting at being born in 1875?
Wow, I'm
so by
impressed.
1899, she was practicing.
Yeah, she was what, 24, I think, when she was practicing, and that's after going to all the different colleges, and that's after you know, doing all the things that she did, and then that was just the beginning. Then she went on to serve on, you know, a number of these boards and hold these high positions, which is another really big deal. Not just one.
Yeah, the Texas Board of Examiners in optometry. She was their vice president and president for 24 years.
Yeah,
you know,
this is the she was doing things before women were allowed to do those things. It's,
I cannot imagine that she got liability insurance in the state of Texas for optometrists. I can't even imagine it. I didn't think anybody ever had insurance in Texas till you like the 1900s.
Yeah.
But she did it.
Wow.
And she thought they needed liability insurance, and she got it passed in the state of Texas.
Wow. She did a lot of, I mean, how do I say? She did a lot of groundbreaking, important things that made a difference for a lot of people. I would imagine probably opened the door for a lot of things that people didn't think they could have an open door for.
That's right. I think for women, she did an excellent job. I can't believe that the Chamber of Commerce was going on back then, and she was president of it. She's president of everything.
Yeah.
And serving on all these boards. I mean, I never even heard of women doing all that back then.
Yeah. What was it? Director of Ophthalmology?
Optometrist.
When
the Texas Optometrist was first published, she was its editor.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and then she was a trustee of the American Optometric Association. And in 27, she was organizing the Texas Women's Auxiliary. I mean, she was an organizer. I mean, you know, she was no shrinking violet.
No. No, and she was only retired for 2 years. She dedicated her whole life to not only this, but advancing women's causes, making improvements and getting insurance. I mean, all the things that she did bettered everybody's lives. It wasn't just, you know, personal.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I mean, she helped the city of Brownwood and the county of Bell. I mean, she did a lot of things for Brownwood that nobody else would have ever done.
Yeah. And sadly, I've never even heard of her name before. Molly Wright Armstrong.
Gosh.
Yes. That was a new one to me.
And she's famous. You go look in our Texas history, and there she is. She's listed.
Yeah.
All through your Texas history for what she did. And then the plaque, you know, is there. And, of course, that is from the Texas Association. It's just amazing to me, everything she did.
Yeah. I mean, you almost wonder, it's just like, if she was born in 1875, when did, like, they actually start, you know, having optometrists? I mean, it had to have been not much before that, I wouldn't think. Maybe, but, and I'm not an expert on optometry or anything like that, so I don't claim to know, but I didn't even know that optometrists went back much further than that. It seems like a science,
and, you know,
that they couldn't do.
The Dallas Morning News was in business back then, and they did a story on her, published her obituary and everything, and then the Fort Worth Star-Telegram did too.
Wow.
I mean, that's how much they were impressed by what she had done in life. Her place in history, you know, is just amazing.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, just, I'm just just shocked at how she had time to do all this, you know, being on these boards and dedicating time and then having an actual practice on top of it. And I mean, you think about it, you know, we go to work and we're at work for what, 8, 10, 12 hours a day. And, you know, by then you go home and you have supper and maybe you go out or something or do something. But, you know, to serve on these boards and do all these things on top of everything she was already doing, that's tough to do all by itself. I don't know. She's really, really a force, I guess, to be reckoned with when it comes to not only women's history, but Texas history as well.
And everything's been published about her by the Texas State Historical Association.
Yeah.
That's how famous she is for being the first woman optometrist, and then all of her works. I mean, she had to have been awfully smart.
Yeah.
I just think, yeah, it's awfully smart. I mean, she took the reins of the horse, but, you know, and just did all this stuff.
Yeah. You have to wonder how much pushback did she get, because back then women didn't do this sort of thing.
No, they didn't do anything like this. Yeah. They knitted and stayed home.
Yeah, yeah. Did the things that they did. But this is so far outside of, you know, it's one thing to have a practice, but then it's another thing to become a leader, become a president, a vice president, a director of all these things. Not just attending them, you know, she wasn't
doing it,
but to actually lead them. I mean, that's a big deal. You know, you kind of wonder, not only did she accomplish these things, but how many people, you know, didn't necessarily agree with or accept, you know, women stepping outside of their lanes. And so I'm sure she probably got some kind of pushback from somebody somewhere, and to overcome it.
Or maybe they were just in shock, you know, that a woman was doing all this. They just sat back and watched her smoke, you know, watched her just going down the road, you know. I mean, I don't know. I've never lived in Brownwood, but I imagine it's interesting, and we could probably find some more out about her, about, you know, the city of Brownwood. And like you said, were they pushing back? Or the women all four? We don't know.
I don't know. But, boy, she really accomplished an awful lot. And I'm glad she made it, you know, well into her 80s, because that's an awful lot of time and an awful lot of dedication to really changing the way that I guess, women are allowed to participate in society, which is fantastic. It's just awesome.
It's just amazing. 1875. And died in 64.
Yeah. And didn't retire until
62. She was only retired 2 years before she died.
I know it.
That's pretty funny.
That is dedication for sure. That's amazing. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website's AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
I want to ask you real quick about risks, because, you know, we've been talking about all of these investments, how conservative they are, how much, you know, profit people can make, how little they are affected by other things, how both of these, whether it's life settlements or annuities, it protects their you know, their principal is protected. You always talk about that all the time. Make sure you protect your principal, whereas you can't do that in a lot of other things. Real estate, stock market, you know, the bottom could fall out. You could lose everything, and that's it. And there's no recourse or anything like that. But with these, always protecting your principal in a conservative way is top of mind. So there's got to be some kind of maybe a downside or a risk. What about with life settlements?
The biggest risk would be your premium call. So it's always good to know how much the premium is. Everybody asks me that before they go in a policy. How much is the premium? So that you want that premium to really be low. Let me give you a good example on this policy that just matured today, or this week anyway. This lady invested, let's see, $50,000, and her premium on that was $68.42. Okay?
That's
the kind we like. That's the ones people want.
Yeah.
They want those you know, for the whole policy, if it went over, it was $500 a year. and that's divided about between eight people, okay? So the premium is the most important thing you're going to do. The other thing is, remember, it's not liquid till it matures. It's got to have that maturity. Right. And the other thing is, you must be accredited. So you must make $200,000 or you must be worth $1 million without your house.
Does that intimidate people when they come over and talk to you for the first time about life settlements? Do they say, oh, we're not even close to accredited?
And... No. Everybody that comes is worth way over that.
Oh, okay. All right. Because I know mean, you've
told... Most of them are worth over $1 million.
Okay. Right.
I mean, over.
Well over.
Most of them have got a couple million or $1 million in their IRAs. Then they have savings. They have other things.
Okay.
So usually it's not a problem.
All right.
Now, if they call in and say, I've got $100,000, then they have to do annuities.
Okay. Good. So I assume then there's no, there's not really the same type of accreditation qualifications with annuities.
No.
Then.
It's much easier with annuities because it's a different type of investment.
Okay. Are there any risks with annuities or?
Not really. I mean, it's a life insurance company that's worth billions. All the life insurance companies that we represent are worth billions. And all of them have been in business for years and years and years. So your money is safe with them because they can pay off. And that's the important thing. And they're A rated. We represent one B rated company. And that's it.
And that's really the exception to the rule, and there's reasons for that. And so, you know.
Well, they're worth $2
billion. Yeah, that'll
do
it.
Our attorneys say they're safe.
Yeah.
They say with $2 billion, they're all right.
Yeah, it should be okay.
That's right, they're okay. Because we hesitated and lost the deal, and it came in real early. We've regretted that ever since.
Yeah. So, all right. So people can really, when it comes down to it, whether we're, you know, somebody's considering a life settlement or an annuity, the whole point is in the landscape that we're in, the bubble could burst at any time. And so as people get closer and closer to retirement, even if they're planning 5 years out, maybe even 10 years out, you know, there is a planning process in order to make sure that people are set up properly for retirement. You know, the closer you get, the less risky you want to be. And so either one is a great opportunity for people to invest conservatively so they're set up properly. So for anything to
and
happen.
And then a lot of people, excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
I just had a thought. A lot of people that own a business, they're retiring, and this is perfect for them because, you know, they're bringing this cash out of their business. They're going to get a lump sum. So they can bring the lump sum over, and we can invest it.
That's
also a good idea.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. We don't always talk about business owners, and that does.
That's right.
That counts. That is assets that counts. So. Yeah, it's a big deal, you know, especially when people are able to sell something like that, like a business, and get that lump sum. It's a great opportunity because you don't want to lose that lump. You don't want to stick it in the stock market and that's everything you've got. And then, you know, you think you're going to travel and do all these things around the world. And then you put it in the stock market and the bottom falls out and you lose everything. And oops, we didn't mean to sell our business. We're going to have to go back to work now. That's the last thing people want to do. So... wherever people are, they do need to come talk to you. If they're ready to get started, that's fine. If they have more questions, that's fine as well. But they do need to call, make an appointment. So, Faye, one last time, what is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website's AmericanFinancialMidland.com.